From the Land to Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the sixth day of July 2021. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson. He's at L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. Gary Schnitke will be here to discuss his latest article for the Farm Doc Daily website, looking at the number of rented acres in the state of Illinois and what size farms are renting those acres. And then we'll close out our time together by talking with Ed Ussett, University of Minnesota Extension Agricultural Marketing Specialist, and Don Day, who's been keeping track of the weather forecast models as they're changing over the Corn Belt and the rainfall that's predicted for the weekend and next week. And we'll do all of that right here on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
In Chicago today, December corn was down 40 cents. That was at 5.39 and three quarters for the old crop. New crop was down more than that. March at 5.46 at a quarter, down 40. Beans were off 89 at $13.44 in the August and 94 in the November at 13.05. Live cattle futures finished up 40 cents and feeders were 3.57 and a half higher on the day. Lean hogs at 102.35 were up $2.12.5 on this Tuesday. Wayne Nelson now joins us from L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana, to talk about a rough day in Chicago. I made note, and we'll talk later with Don Day about this, that the models are showing rainfall as if it was made for the Corn Belt by the time we get to the weekend. And there's actually some rain in Minnesota at this point during the day. Markets dropped down the limit in corn and off sharply in soybeans for the day, though they managed to not end all the way lower in soybeans. Tell me about what happened.
Well, I think you told most of the story right there. The weather forecast just got immensely better than it was when we left markets on Friday. You know, being a three-day weekend, well, that offered a lot of chance for changes. And boy, you know, we got some rain across the Dakotas. We had some across Minnesota. And, you know, forecast across most all of the dry areas. You know, the amounts, I think we got a little drier on some of them and pushing a little farther south on the noon maps today. That's when the beans came back just a little bit. But overall, I think you said it all when you said this was just a rain or forecast made for saving this crop in a lot of areas. So, you know, I think that this is going to bring us back quite a bit as far as the conditions go, if we can continue to get this rain through this week and through the next weekend, Todd. You know, that's one of the things we're going to be seeing crop condition ratings this afternoon. Most of the average guesses are to stay pretty steady, maybe 1% better in the beans, you know, as far as the average guesses like that. So, but how much has the crop been hurt going into now? How much is gone just because of dry areas or drowned out? You know, some of those 9-inch rains, we've got to have some ponds that just aren't quite as full anymore. So the lofty levels that we were looking at for yields are maybe have been dented a little bit, but the rest of the crop can come back quite a bit here now.
How do crops look in your area?
Well, you know, without a rain, a lot of those crops, the whole fields would have looked like not very nice, I guess is the way to put it. So we, you know, we've got drowned out spots in some of those field people that replanted once, and I doubt they'll bother replanting again in some of their places like that. But overall, when you added moisture, taking out what was replanted the first time for another pond and helping the rest of the field, it probably is going to help the crop or the size of the crop more for the rains that we had those than not have those, because they were in a lot of those areas that got those were in pretty much drought conditions as we looked at things. So that moisture did probably more good than bad. Some of those guys will tell you, well, I've got ponds here, or I've got drowned out spots here. But they were going to have drought-stricken fields instead of pond areas. So I would have to say it adds to the bushels.
On Thursday morning of this week, CONAB will update again its numbers for the Brazilian Safrina corn crop. This time there'll be a frost in it, a drought in it. Is there any discussion at all about those numbers coming down from the 96 million metric tons they currently have?
Yeah, a lot of private forecast, you know, guesstimate people or advisory firms are saying, you know, it's going to be closer to 85, 86 this time around than the 90. So, there is a lot of talk about, you know, that number decreasing quite a bit, and that's going to make a little difference. Another thing, maybe the number doesn't go down as much, but the quality does, and that's going to make a difference, too, on how hopefully that could push some business back to the U.S. because if Brazil has some quality problems, ours is generally a better quality crop.
I did see that there might be a possibility that U.S. corn needs to be imported into Brazil.
But that's something we'd love to do. We'd love to send some down there. But, you know, basically that's the problem, I could say, with South America. Or if Argentina has some problems with grades and also less bushels, why that can take down our carryout number, and that's what we'd love to have to get this market built back up.
Hey, thank you.
Thank you, Todd.
It's Wayne Nelson. He's with L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. I'm Todd Gleason, joined by Illinois Extension agricultural economist Gary Schnitke to discuss his latest article posted to the FarmDoc Daily website at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Gary, thanks for being with us. Tell me about this article, please.
Now, we looked at farm tenure in Illinois, and what we were particularly looking at is how tenure, or the percent owned versus percent rented, have changed over time. And in Illinois, the percent owned and percent rented haven't really changed. We've been pretty stable at 60% of the acres that are farmed in Illinois are rented. And that's been roughly that value since the 1960s onward and probably before that. We haven't seen that change. And by the way, Illinois is one of the highest percent rented states in the nation. But what we have seen is who farms that has changed. And larger farms are the ones that are increasingly farming a larger percent of those rented acres.
And so you use some of the census of ag numbers to bring that forward?
Yeah, so we use census of ag numbers. And in 1997, 33% of the acres, the rented acres, were farmed by 1,000-plus-acre farms. So those farms with 1,000-plus acres farmed 33% in 1997. Fast forward to 2017, it's 60%. So 1,000-plus-acre farms are farming 60% of the acres rented. And the group that has grown the most is the 2,000-plus-acre farms, and they went from 2% in 1997 to one-third in 2017.
So can you break that down by size of farm and how much they're likely to rent at different sizes?
So, yeah, what we looked at is as farms get bigger, more of their land base becomes rented. So just to give you an example, less than 500 acres farms, they only rent 36% of their acres. So the majority of their land, 500-acre and smaller farms, are owned land. If we get over into the over 2,000 acres, 72% of their acres are rented. And so what we see is with any farm size above 500, the majority of their acres are rented, not owned.
Does it make very much of a difference by region of the state? And that may be by acres that are actually owned by the farm, and I don't know whether you have that out of the census data or whether it's from FBFM.
Yeah, what we see, and this is consistent across census values and FBFM values, the lowest, let me restate it, the highest percent rented is in central Illinois. So the central Illinois area is where we have the most percent rented. The least is in southern Illinois, and northern Illinois is sort of in between. One of the things you see across the nation is those areas that have the highest land productivity or the the most productive soils, they tend to have the highest percent rented.
What, if any, implications are there of so much rented farmland or the changing size of the farms that are renting farmland, I guess is a better way to put it.
Yeah. So larger farms got larger primarily because they rented more land, right? So that's how they grew. And as a result now, larger farms are more impacted by changes in the farmland rental market. If we see higher cash rents coming on in the future, it's the larger farms that are going to feel that more on their bottom line than, say, smaller farms, because in general, and again, you have to say this in general, that the larger farms have a higher percent of their land base rented. A second implication relates to conservation practices. And as we're thinking about conservation practices right now, many of them, and you can think of cover crops as an example, has sure run cost, some very good environmental benefits, but if there are returns to it, they're into the future. And you got to remember that rental arrangements, they tend to be one-year rental arrangements. There's no guarantee that a farmer is going to continue to farm that land in the future. So we sort of have to, if we want to encourage conservation practices, cover crops, we got to take into consideration that that there's short run cost, and if they're totally borne by the farmer for long run gains, which won't necessarily accrue to that farmer, we have an issue there. So as we're looking forward to these conservation practices, perhaps federal policy that incentivize those, we really do need to consider owners of land, farmers of land, and remember that those rented acres are 60% of them are on 1,000-plus acre farms where economics is really key.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Gary Schnittke is an agricultural economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Don Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming now joins us on this Tuesday to discuss the weather forecast. Thanks, Don, for being with us today. Over the weekend, after the close on Friday, some of the model runs showed what has been a profound implication for the CME group, at least today in Chicago, limit lower for corn and soybeans. Almost got there. They may have actually reached it at some point. With a rainfall event across the Corn Belt that looks like it was just made for the Corn Belt from Iowa all the way to Ohio. And I'm wondering whether that's changing and what those model runs are all about.
Well, certainly there has been in recent model runs an indication of those widespread rains and that potential there to cover a lot of the Corn Belt. But some of the new data coming in here as we speak is showing that the axis of the heavier precipitation may not be as far north. Now, it's still showing some pretty good rains across portions of eastern Nebraska, portions of Missouri, southern Iowa, mainly south of Interstate 80, you know, staying south of I-80 across Illinois and then southern Indiana and eastern Ohio. Not the amounts of rain showing on earlier model runs. But as any meteorologist will tell you, you always take model runs one at a time and not latch on to one particular model run, but let several start agreeing with each other before it's, you know, really time to press the button on certainty. So I would say that even though the markets are moving on the forecast for better rain chances, and certainly we do see better rain chances, whether it's enough to really help out some of those drier areas, I think is still a little bit of a question mark.
And tell me about the rainfall we're seeing today.
Well, it's going to be, I'd call this garden variety, typical summertime thunderstorm activity, especially in the eastern areas. You know, this would be across portions of Indiana, Ohio. Then, you know, there's going to be some areas of Minnesota portions of Iowa and eastern areas of South Dakota and Nebraska that see some shower and thunderstorm activity over the next couple of days. Nothing that I would say is remarkable, but at least some of those northwest Corn Belt areas are going to see some pockets of rain that they really need.
And the model runs are predicting rains when?
Well, the better chances for rains getting into those areas that are moving the markets, it's really as we get on into the Friday, Saturday, Sunday time frame. It's late Friday through the weekend and into Monday and Tuesday of next week when we see the highest probability of rain. And I think that's what's moving the markets right now is the prospects over the next 7 days. Now, if we were to take those model runs out to 2 weeks, it does show that the rain chances remain pretty good into that second week. So through this weekend and early next week and then the following week, it doesn't appear as though the spigot will be turned off, but there will be more rain chances. But again, where those better rain chances end up, when you're talking about a computer model looking out the 2 weeks, you just have to take it with a grain of salt.
Hey, thank you. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
That's Don Day. He's with Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. We're now joined by Ed Ussett. He is a grain marketing specialist at the University of Minnesota and with Extension there. Thank you for being with us on this Tuesday, Ed. The markets are down sharply, 40 cents, limit lower in the corn and off nearly 90 in the soybeans. Does it all have to do with the weather forecast now?
It has a lot to do with the weather forecast, what has happened over the last day and what's forecast to come over the next 4 or 5 days. And by the way, Todd, thanks for inviting me on. And I'll take the blame for this, Todd. This is all about weather in areas that have needed rain. And I'm talking about my own home state of Minnesota. Western and southwestern Minnesota in particular have been dry for too long. There's been damage done. The Dakotas, of course, having issues. Northwest Iowa and this area I just described, that's where we're getting rain. Now, is it going to turn it around and turn it into a record-breaking bumper crop? No, I don't think so. But it's going to cure a lot of ills. And on top of the rain, we're looking at high highs over the next week in the mid-70s and lows into the 50s or the low 60s all week. So it's pretty, that's pretty good weather for this time of year for a corn crop.
Not a bumper crop, but can it turn it around into a trend line yield crop?
I think in some areas, yes. Let's take North Dakota aside. I think the damage has been done there. And I think there are parts of southwestern Minnesota that the damage has been done. I don't think we get it back to a trend line yield. But the state in general, respectable yield. And it sure is good to see Iowa getting the forecast showing some broad rains. I don't think you have issues in the eastern Corn Belt. I mean, nothing is ever perfect, but you've had the rains, and I'm looking at this five-day weather map, and it's just sitting over. The forecast is for good rains. I mean, 2 inches or more throughout Iowa and right into the southern tier of Minnesota. So it's good stuff. It's good stuff.
Is there a knee-jerk reaction that producers should try to avoid on a 40-cent down day trade? Or is there something they should actually try to do?
At this point, Todd, people have, I like to think people have made up their mind, right or wrong, on whether or not they're going to be an early pricer of grain for new crop or not. I mean, I got to believe people have made up their mind if they're willing to do that. Some people have done it, and of course, they're feeling terrible a week ago at 2 acres and we're up, and here we are as we speak today, we're back to where we were at the time of that report. It's going to be this way. I mean, tomorrow we might be trading the fact that, boy, I thought they were going to get 2 inches in Iowa or an inch, and they only got a half an inch. You know, we're going to trade news like that right through this first half and right through July, frankly. And, you know, I think people have made up their mind whether or not they're going to go after this in new crop pricing. It's going to be volatile the rest of the way.
Do soybeans have as much potential?
Soybeans, I always think more about the August weather, and because I think August is more important to the soybean crop in the Corn Belt. So I look around, I see some small soybeans, but they do have, I mean, if we can change this weather pattern to get more regular rains in the northern and the northwestern part of the Corn Belt, we can save the soybean crop and we could get trendline yields, but it's got to turn around. And this pattern, what we're seeing today, we got to see more of that in the next 6 to 8 weeks to do that.
Anything else that we should talk about for the day as it's related to the marketplace?
I can't get my mind off of wheat. I know that your listeners, Todd, they don't think about wheat a lot, maybe soft wheat some. It's on the defensive, and I saw the spring wheat market was down about 50 cents, but that's 50 cents off its highs, so it's still a pretty good price. You know, I'm looking around, Todd, and it has been at least 3 months, maybe four, that the price of hard wheat in the winter wheat belt, not soft wheat, hard red winter wheat, bread wheat, is trading at 50 cents to a dollar a bushel under corn. And that, this is not a phenomenon like that. This didn't just creep up 2 weeks ago. This has been going on for 4 months or more. And I just wonder about the feeding of wheat and where that's going. Or where it's going right now and where it will go if this persists with time. And it's interesting. I don't know if I've ever seen, I'd have to look back to see winter wheat, not soft red winter wheat, but hard red winter wheat, trading at such a large discount to corn over a long period of time.
It is something to watch, and we've talked about it. It is important to the corn producer,
yeah,
because substitution, yeah, is substitution regardless, one way or the other.
It can happen. It can happen. And it's been persistent. You know, substitutions don't happen on a blip. You know, wheat becomes cheaper than corn for a couple of weeks. Not much changes. But when it's going on 4 or 5 months, substitutions are going to happen.
Hey, thank you.
Hey, thank you, Todd. You take care.
You too. That's Ed Ossett. He's a grain marketing specialist for University of Minnesota Extension. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report.